This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is out this week. I'm Bob Garfield. This week in the New York Times, another bombshell report on President Trump's financial house of cards. A decade-long period of crushing losses and a tax write-off of a staggering $1 billion.
Their findings are eye-popping, stunning. There's a lot of different adjectives you could use.
Reporters Russ Buettner and Suzanne Craig pored over transcripts of Trump's taxes from 1985 to 1994 and found that he had, quote, lost more money than nearly every other individual American taxpayer.
Every year that we looked at, he lost money. It's unbelievable. We would have thought at least in one of the years that we saw, maybe the year he wrote Art of the Deal, he would have made money. He didn't. He was just bleeding money.
This from the swashbuckling dealmaker who'd famously become a fixture on the Forbes 400 list of wealthiest Americans. Very famously.
He's young, he has Robert Redford good looks, he's conservative, and he's rich. I'm talking about Larry King's guest, Donald Trump.
He just has enough money to give everyone in the audience tonight $1 million.
But if his business failures and his debts were so immense, how did he get on the Forbes 400 list to begin with? The answer is by being Donald Trump.
What I think you might want to do is at some point, maybe after that, before you write your little article, maybe you want to call me again and sit down because I'd like to discuss a couple of things.
That was Trump in 1982 on the phone with Forbes reporter Jonathan Greenberg, whose unenviable task was to evaluate Trump's claims of fabulous riches. He botched the job, but in fairness, he was depending heavily on an unreliable source.
The unreliable source was Donald Trump,
who wanted the world to see not a house of cards, but a gilded palace, and thus commenced decades of lies, threats, lawsuits, and a bizarre codependence with the media. Now a freelance journalist, publisher, and novelist, Greenberg was present at creation, the lie, the origin myth upon which a 37-year long con was built. The young developer, Greenberg says, understood the pricelessness of validation from the People magazine of capitalism.
It became his obsession to lobby the reporters of the Forbes 400 and Malcolm Forbes himself.
In that first year, you settled on a figure for Donald Trump's net worth at that time. What was it?
$100 million. That was the cutoff to be on the list.
But with some distance, you've been able to ascertain what his actual net worth was at that time.
Distance and time, it was under $5 million.
He claimed in those days that he was in control of what had been his father's fortune, and that wasn't true at all.
That's true. That was one of the big lies, and we didn't find out until his father had died. And of course, everything comes out in time. The other lie was how many apartments they owned. They actually never owned more than 10,000 apartments, but he inflated that figure. And most importantly, and germane, Bob, to this, what we see in the New York Times, was that he inflated his cash flow on the buildings. And that was his MO. What Trump is very good at is finding out what it takes to deceive, and then promoting that deception in a way that will be very hard to disprove.
In 1982, you gave him $100 million. In 83, he got a raise to $200 million in the Forbes list. And then the next year, 1984, you get a call from the Trump Organization. The caller tells you he's a VP and he has some juicy info. What's the info?
Well, the call was actually, it was my annual interview with Donald Trump, and his secretary, Norma Fordera, said that I'm not going to meet Trump in person this year. The VP of finance, John Barron, would schedule a call with me and give me all the information I needed.
Okay, what's your first name, by the way? John Barron.
So I picked up the phone and it was John Barron.
And I'd like to talk to you off the record if I can, just to make your thing easier.
Okay, sure.
Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
Answering all the questions I had about Trump's holdings and his net worth and all the success that he had had, as well as his relationship with his father.
And his claim as to the $200 million figure from the year before?
Oh, he said that we were way low, you know, that he was worth many times the amount we had had in the past. And he proved it by going through building after project and speaking of how much money these projects were turning off for Donald Trump.
In fact, as we now know, John Barron was actually Trump himself, lying about his identity to lie about his balance sheet. What number was he pushing and what did Forbes end up going with?
He was pushing $2 billion. He was saying that he was worth more than any other person in real estate, that he never signed personally on his debt. We ended up going with $600 million, and we took Trump's father off the list because one of the things John Barron told me is that Trump had consolidated all his father's assets in his name.
Are you saying that perhaps for tax purposes, it's been the ownership has been transferred to Donald Trump?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay, and would you say, you know, in excess of 90% of the ownership of the...
I'd say in excess of 90. In fact, well, it's really closer to even the ultimate, but it's in excess of 90%, yes.
So instead of splitting $200 million or half the value of the estate between one and the other, we gave all of the value to Donald Trump.
Yet, if the Times report is correct, he actually at that time had a negative net worth. He was more than $50 million in debt, which, you know, if I understand this correctly, Jonathan, would have made him literally one of the poorest men in America.
That's true. He was overextended. He overpaid for his properties and his construction, and he was having enormous tax losses based upon the debt service of the buildings because interest rates were very high during that period.
Now, I have to ask you, the fact that this employee Trump's secretary set you up with, John Barron, had the same voice as Trump might have been a red flag. And also, didn't most mega-rich people in your experience actually want not to appear on the Forbes list? Wasn't the whole lobbying thing strange in itself?
The editors looked at me of the Washington Post when I first played the tape for them before my big story in the Post last year. And they looked at me like, are you an idiot? You know, when they heard the tape, it sounds exactly like Donald Trump. Nobody could anticipate something that nobody had ever done before, which is talking to a national media outlet pretending to be somebody else using your own voice. His outrageous behavior is off the charts of what anyone else would do. In terms of other people, there was a damned if you do, damned if you don't approach to it, which means that if you're off the list, people want to know, hey, I thought you were worth $500 million and their cutoff is $200 million. Why are you not on there, Bob? Or if you try to fake your way on and Forbes finds out, which it would over the years, you're taken off the list and seen as a promoter. And what went wrong? I guess your business isn't going so well. I guess we won't lend you $100 million for this new shopping center that you want to build, Bob. So most people, to the extent that they participate with Forbes, they participate in order to help ensure accuracy. So only Donald Trump, he's an outlier. There are very few people who try to game the system.
Now, you have penned over the years a number of mea culpas about getting suckered in this scheme. So, you know, let us just put aside for the moment questions of journalistic negligence and go to the supply side of the conversation, which is, tell me again, what's in it for Trump to start building this lie in 1982 and leveraging the fake assets over the years?
With ordinary business people, you need to show a cash flow statement that includes all the debt. What Trump really did was use the Forbes 400 and said, well, look, they're the best experts. Here's my statement. Here's what they say. His own statement showed even more. And he said, well, Forbes has me for $600 million. You know, if you don't want to believe me, look at them. And if they said, and this is what the gray area is that has yet to come forth in the media. If they would say, well, listen, we need a statement of profit and loss, he'd say, I don't have time for that, Bob of Citibank. I'm going to go to JP Morgan. I'm going to go to Chase. And, you know, and I'll get you fired, by the way, too, because I've shown you everything you need. It was enough for Chemical Bank. Why is it enough for you? And so it's a combination of threats and lies. And the lie or the deception was that Forbes had validated this information independently. Why do they need to bother him for more info?
By time when journalists began reporting the depth of his financial woes, he also actually sued one author for libel. He lost the case, and he threatened to sue others. So crucial to his house of cards was the illusion of great wealth and power, right?
Absolutely.
Forbes took him off the list for 5 years, but The Art of the Deal was a huge bestseller. He was cemented in the public consciousness as a tycoon.
Okay, Donald Trump is here. You're on the cover of the new issue of People magazine. I don't know what I'm beating around the bush here. I don't know why you're being so goofy about this. It says on the cover, you're a billionaire.
It does say that.
Yeah.
If so people says it, I would have to believe it. When people says it.
Which got him funding for a series of catastrophic ventures. Trump Airlines, Trump Casinos, Trump University, Trump Meat. $1 billion of 1990s losses, as we now see reported in the Times, losses of other people's money, and he wrote this fiction to the White House. So, Jonathan, it's all your fault, right?
it's all my fault, Bob. Had I only known.
Forbes just came out and they said I'm worth $4.5 or $5 billion.
People still believe him. It is our fault. He's the only one who ever played the system like this. And people continue to underestimate the depth of his deceit and how far he'll go with a lie.
This Forbes 400 was tremendously successful for Trump, obviously. I guess we should not ignore the fact that it was also vastly successful for Forbes magazine, no?
Absolutely. It was the biggest success of any project Forbes ever worked on in its 100-year history. We made celebrities out of billionaires.
Jonathan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. It's been a pleasure.
Jonathan Greenberg is an investigative reporter who's written for The Washington Post, The New York Times, and, of course, Forbes. For 3 years in the 80s, he helped bring us the Forbes 400. Coming up, a whole other slant on big money and taxes. This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.